Good morning, I'm David Ellis. Welcome to this edition of Down to Brass Tacks, going until 1:30 today. Call us as usual at 434-1790 or send your emails to us at brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. You can also speak with us via WhatsApp. One observation which I have to make has to do with social media in Barbados. Now, it has its pluses and it has its minuses. Up till yesterday and last night, rather, there was a piece of information or an allegation circulating on social media, which required that people in the mainstream media should check to establish whether there was any truth to that particular allegation or not. Earlier in the week, there was another piece where a woman working in the government service claimed that her car had been blocked in by one of the ministers of government. Subsequent information was put out via social media as well, which tended to silence the criticism that had erupted as a consequence of what that lady said. The real lesson out of all of this, though, is that we have to be exceedingly careful coming to conclusions based upon some, not all, but some of what we see on social media. I have some friends who conclude that social media is bad. They associate it with rumor and lies and negative information. I argue that while we have to put up with some of that, there is a lot of good that comes out of it. And to a large extent, Barbadians have had an opportunity to vent to a greater degree, to express themselves. But we need at all times to be cautious in drawing conclusions with a limited amount of information. No matter what is said, there is often at least one other side to every story. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hi.
Welcome.
Good morning. Yes, thank you. I have you on speakerphone, so there may be some background noise.
But oh, I thought you were warning me because somebody else might be listening.
I was just listening to your comments about the WhatsApp and social media. Yeah. And this is going to feed into what I'm going to say, but let me start. I was browsing Facebook last night, and I saw some information circulating regarding Ross University. I felt quite offended and quite outraged about what I was reading. And I'm going to read to you two statements, and then I'm going to develop. The first one I saw on a WhatsApp group: Ross is eagerly awaiting application from the persons, and these are persons who were displaced by government, so that they may be considered before others. The second statement that I read that has me so upset is that the Barbados government website says that there's a specific website which was set up for the displaced government workers. I felt outraged and offended because I am unemployed, but I am not a government worker who's been actively seeking employment for over a year and a half. And I think that this government and those in authority needs to realize that other people were also indirectly affected by government's cost-cutting measures and indirectly affected by the issues that were happening within the country. Now, I see that as discriminatory, because there are other people out there who want to be employed as well and who are not going to be given the opportunity because displaced workers from the government are going to be given first choice. Now, after I simmered down, I thought about it and I simmered down, I have a suggestion for the government. And my suggestion is that they create a national database for people who are actively seeking employment. This could be attached to the Ministry of Labor, and people should be able to send their CVs or skill set for fill out some form online so we could capture the various work experience that these people have and track their career and see where they're suited. And the reason for this is that we have some organizations in Barbados that represent the government that go and attract businesses to Barbados. And one of the things we could do, such as Invest Barbados, and one of the things we could do is to encourage these people to seek that national database first before to see if there are any persons in there who would be suitable to work within their organization. And the other thing, I wrote a few of them, so just let me quickly look through it. Right, and then there are some other companies, any other companies, it's not only through Invest Barbados, but any company who is looking to come to Barbados, they could seek that national database of people who are unemployed so that they could see if there's anyone in there who could fit the criteria that they're willing, that they require for their business. And the last thing I'm going to say is that I'm willing to offer my services to help set up and coordinate this effort because I think it is entirely necessary. When I look and see how we were approaching the whole situation, it looks like we were chickens without heads just running around. People are upset, so I got to fix it quickly. Yes, people are upset. There are people who were unemployed before who are also upset. So we need to be able to recognize that this government serves the whole of Barbados and not only government workers.
Okay. Oh, well, you know that I like to delve into the human interest aspect of things. You have spoken passionately, and I commend you for having not just spoken out against what you saw as the particular trend, but for putting some idea on the table for further examination and discussion. What has your experience been out of work?
Well, what I did, the first thing I did when I realized that I would have been out of work was to pursue further education to make myself more marketable.
How long ago was that?
That was a year and a half ago. I had actually started to study prior to being unemployed, and I saw it as a good opportunity to become full-time and speed up my studies so I can get back into the world of work.
And you're coming from a private sector background.
Yes, a private sector background.
Yes.
How it has been, I've been applying locally. I've even applied outside of Barbados. There are not many, a lot of us are in the same boat, so it's a very competitive environment right now. So that's where we're at. So it's just, you know, who is the best at the interview at that point in time that will be given the opportunity.
Share with us the frustration associated with it.
One of the things I really detest is that a lot of local businesses don't even acknowledge and that they've received your email or that they've received your letter. I know they may be receiving tons of applications, but certainly there may be a standard response, something to know that you've been there. I see jobs that I'm equally qualified for that I have applied for, not a response. Not even, okay, you partially filled some of it or you don't. I am very well qualified and with a good track record.
Can you be more specific as to what your qualifications are? What is your area of specialty?
My area of specialty is in marketing and sales. But my work experience covers many areas. It covers ISO certification, it covers policies and procedures, it covers customer service, it covers structures, it covers business development, it covers sales.
What would have caused your situation where you've had to be laid off in the first place? Was it part of a general retrenchment or was it just an individual issue?
It was a general retrenchment.
So from where you sit, how do you see the situation facing Barbados then and now?
Okay. So I think that there are many opportunities within Barbados. I think that there is no... When I look, there are opportunities that are all scattered and there's no cohesive unit to bring them together to then... Or, well, let me use an example. So Invest Barbados promotes Barbados for investment opportunities outside of Barbados. So they've gone, they've sold Barbados, and these people say, yes, I'm coming to Barbados. What happens next? Do they leave them? Are these people then encouraged to work with the various industries, like the Ministry of Labor or other industries, or maybe the personnel department, who may have tons of applications there lying for people who can't be employed? I mean, where else do we go? What synergies do we have between these government departments to then take this through? So that is the example that I'm talking about. And that's the reason why I suggested that we have a national database, so that anybody who's coming to set up in Barbados could look through this, see if there's any of the persons in that database who could fit within the requirements they have for the job.
But let's deal with the philosophical issue here. We are now in the throes of an IMF agreement. At the core of this is divestment and trying to shift some of the burden away from government to private sector. You are a private sector person, but in this conversation, you are again putting the emphasis on governmental action. How do you reconcile these two positions?
And David, the reason why I responded in that way is because of the two things I read that had me incensed. And I agree with you. It doesn't necessarily have to be a project managed by the government, but it has to be a project that works in tandem with the government. And the reason why I saw this national database is that the government will get a true picture of really what the unemployment level is in Barbados.
And you don't buy the figures that have been advanced to us?
I do not think that the figures are up.
Well, that's an opinion.
I think that some of the information, they may be missing some of the information.
What causes you to say that?
If I look at my personal circle and I hear the different stories, okay, for example, I've been out of, how does the government know that I am not working? Because, or that I'm actively employed? Because I would have collected unemployment, and after I collected unemployment, I would have disappeared off of the government's radar. So I'm not contributing NIS because I'm not being paid. I'm not contributing PAYE because I'm not being paid. How do they know that I am not working? Where am I collected in that survey, in that number of unemployed people? Where am I?
How many other people?
Oh, no.
No,
I'm saying they don't know that I am unemployed.
Right. So how many other people have you come into contact with who have shared this kind of frustration, the overall frustration with you, of having no job, looking here, looking there, and getting nowhere?
I didn't count it, but there are people in my circle. So it seems I didn't count it, but there are a number. Okay. I know people who are in the same situation in private sector who are looking in the same industry. They have skills in other industries. So I'm not limiting myself to marketing. I'm limiting myself to all of my experience because I am that adaptable and flexible.
There are some people who say, look, if you're well qualified and you can't find a job in Barbados, then why not look elsewhere? What have you done in that regard, and what are your thoughts on it?
I do. I look elsewhere. I look outside, but...
How challenging is that?
In terms of looking? No,
in terms of looking, in terms of finding.
Well, that's it. That's the challenge. Because there is, for example, if it is within the region, you need your CARICOM skills certificate. The environment is similar to what you know. The cultures are, while they're different, there may be some similarities. You can easily relocate in another Caribbean country. But when you go outside of the Caribbean, that is more difficult if you don't have family, if you don't know the lay of the land. These are things that are going to be more difficult. And difficult doesn't mean it can't be done, right? I'm not saying that difficult means it can't be done. I'm just saying that it is difficult, and sometimes it seems like employers look at things like that. Well, if she doesn't have any, I mean, this person may not be known to my particular area, so I may not be able to hire them. Or there may be a cost associated to relocating them. Things like that they consider.
This is start a business. Tell us about the problems associated with that kind of idea.
Well, if you've been unemployed for a year and a half, then you're going to need some sort of funding to start a business, because most likely your personal funding, if you plan to do that, is going to be pretty, well, it's going to be almost non-existent. You will need to certainly find any of the organizations, and I'm not aware of any right now, who could assist you in setting up a business. I mean, that's all I could say at this time.
For some of these people who are being...
And David, I want to say something. Everybody's not entrepreneurial either.
Correct.
So entrepreneurship and owning your own business is not suited for everyone.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Some of these people who are now going home are being told that the government is going to give them some startup capital, $5,000 grant or something like that. Put that in the context of the answer that you just gave, that not everybody is entrepreneurial.
Correct. And furthermore, I wasn't just sent home by the government. So where can I get this $5,000 from? How do I acquire it?
No, you are addressing people outside of this group. And you're talking about private sector people. And there were people who were sent home from the NCC and from Beautify Barbados as well. So there's that core of people who are not within this group. The issue here is that the government is trying its best to show that to this particular group, it has a heart, and that it is trying to bend over backwards to say...
For them?
For those people. However, your point is... You've got a bigger problem than this group. You have a larger core of Barbadians who have been without jobs, and they also need to hear what can be done. The government has also spoken about retraining. I heard the Prime Minister, when addressing the students at UE the other evening, make the point that for the next 3 or 4 years, Barbados must have a national retraining program that will touch across all sectors. How do you see that?
I think I agree with that, because I think that we need to readjust the level of thinking that we have. But it depends on what they plan to offer. For sure, I think that entrepreneurship should be something that could be encouraged. I think that...
How?
Well, being taught in schools, get the children to set up small businesses. Give them... We used to have summer camps. Why can't one of these summer camps deal with some skill, and then at the end you set up your own business? We used to have, because that is part of training. What about in terms of our history, showing local businesses and the struggles that they went through and that they're still surviving? What about our history? When I look at retraining, it has to be holistic. So we can't only talk about retraining in certain aspects. We have to change maybe the whole curriculum, the whole, everything that we look at. May need to be changed. But that is the whole point that I'm trying to say, David, is that when we looked at, when the government is trying to help those people who are recently displaced, but you cannot look at things like that, in my opinion, in isolation. It has to be bigger. Whenever we make change, we have to look at the impact. Change does not only affect certain people, the people who may be cut, but there are people in government who were consulting that no longer have jobs. So they weren't direct employees of government, but they were impacted by the government's cost-cutting measures. I was retrenched when the business started to lose money. Right? My whole point is that there is, you can't only look at these people who are affected. They are affected, and so are we.
Well, I welcome the fact that you have been the first caller to Brass Tacks. And I've spent this time with you because it was clear to me that you had a lot to say. And there is enough information that you have provided us with to suggest that the government perhaps needs to respond to this broader question. They are faced with trying to deal with the immediate situation, but you have presented to us a bigger problem that needs to be addressed. I also want to say this too. I have been getting calls from people who are concerned about the regular callers to Brass Tacks who have been turning it into what they see as a political football. And some people say they are really turned off by that kind of approach. I don't know if some of those who are involved in the process are deliberately setting out to make Brass Tacks a place where fewer people would want to come for information because they may have their vested interest in seeking to destroy it, or whether it is just that they are so partisan that they have a belief that the more often they come here and say certain things, it will help to influence the change that they want to bring about. But I want to appeal to you all to recognize that it is calls like these that really make the difference in this country. People who don't call every day, but they want to get through, to share their experiences, and to make their own recommendations. And to that extent, therefore, ma'am, I want to thank you very, very much for being a part of today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. At 28 minutes past 10, this is Down to Brass Tacks. Some quick reaction to that first caller. This person says, this lady is right. Government speaks to the younger persons, but they stop at the persons like us, who are very qualified, who are mid-40s. I've just accepted a position that is a third of what I used to work for in an effort to meet my monthly obligations. I see that we are left out. If you speak of brain drain, why are we not considered? This other person says that, David, what the lady first caller said makes a lot of sense. However, the government is doing a pilot program, so they cannot start with everyone at the same time. They need to start with this group and then basically work to include the wider public. And that's another opinion. This person says, I totally can relate to this lady speaking about unemployment in the private sector. I've been to about 5 interviews and was told that I was a favorite, but I was just beaten out. It is so frustrating. Now with this government retrenchment, it will be almost impossible to find employment. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Can I respond to the first caller too?
You can.
Well, first of all, I mean, I like the way you drew these things out from her. And but, you know, she's articulate. She's extraordinarily intelligent, no question about that. She has a very pleasant voice. Unlike me, she takes her time to represent what it is that she has in mind. She's a very, very good communicator. So, here's the thing. A suggestion to you. Mm-hmm. Why not employ her on Fridays and give the woman $2.50 to do the show on a Friday?
Huh? Well, if that means that I wouldn't hear you at all sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, if it means that I would have a less belligerent tone coming from you, and if it means that you would at times give some other people a chance to speak rather than going on and on, then I would consider it. Do have a good day. Down to Brass Tacks. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, morning.
Yeah, I live here in Eden Lodge, Crestview Terrace. Mr. Ellis, there is a well here in the path there. It's very, very dangerous and is a health risk. The people went and undo this slab, but they can't do it because it won't clean. And this is almost 2 months. And you got little children that pass here from school and people that pass here from school. And dengue fever and all sorts of things about the place. Mr. Ellis,
so what steps did you take to draw it to the attention of people at the polyclinic or the Ministry of Health?
Mr. Ellis, I went down Country Road 4 times and reported. It was even in the Nation newspaper. I missed a lot of steps with it.
And nothing has been done.
Nothing has been done. This is almost 2 months. This thing is real dangerous.
Now, that's not good enough, though.
And when the slabs break, and they put a door on top of it, a fiberglass door, and they put steel around it, and they had caution tape, but the electronics come up, they pull off his caution tape, and I don't like it. This thing is dangerous.
Well, I hope that having drawn this matter to the attention of the authorities before you came on air, and coming on air now to address it, that we will see some kind of follow-up action in relation to it.
I missed that. Four times I went down in Country Road and reported it.
And I must commend you for that. I mean,
it was a nation newspaper too?
Yeah, but you have shown that you have a strong interest to get up and go down there on four occasions, and you're making a determined effort to see if something could be done about it. And I commend you for taking that position. Okay,
Mr. Ellis, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is my third time calling program as a listener, as a law listener.
Fantastic. Right. Good to have you with us. This person responds to the first caller by saying that the lady, she made her complaint and stated her observations and suggested remedies. But very important, the caller offered her assistance. This is very important, and this is what we need. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hi, good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, morning.
Good to hear you, sir.
How are you?
I am pretty good. Let's hope you're that way at the end of my little input.
Okay.
Right, so I want to perhaps just mention about the road work that's currently going on, a little something on that. But before I go there, I want to just make one or two comments. I see somebody's asking you now to censor the callers or have the program
Basically, that person is giving their opinion as to how it impacts on them and other people that they come into contact with. And that's not so much about censorship. That is more about being sensitive to...
Yeah.
You got to be sensitive to how the program can sound if it comes across as though it is just too heavily weighted along the lines of complaints, criticisms, and a lot of people look for what it came from this lady today, which is recommendations and ideas. I mean, life is about so many different activities and endeavors. Life in this country. So I don't interpret it as censorship, as that person was feeding back. The person actually said to me, you know, as a consequence of it, I don't listen.
Right. Mr. Ellis, I don't hear all this complaining that you...
Yeah, because you are one of the regular callers, so you're not going to hear it.
I'm not that regular. I call every 3-4 weeks.
But you're regular enough.
Regular enough. And
so you may be in different circles. So I have to listen. I would have to listen to people like you, and I have to listen to people like the person who spoke to me and said that it's too much for them.
But this, I don't want to drill, but I just want to say that this world isn't perfect, right? And the Democratic Labor Party took a lot of licks on the calling program, especially the VLB calling program.
Let me just say something to you, though.
5 years.
Well, that may be true, and I can't shield any political party from it, because in the latter days of the Barbados Labor Party, they too claimed that they got a lot of licks, because we have to reflect how people are feeling and what they are saying. But we also have to be sensitive to a scenario where if at any time it appears that the program is being hijacked by any one group of people, then we need to signal our concern and ask for your cooperation in trying to make the program something that is worth listening to.
So, Mr. Ellis, where is the hijack? I hear callers. I hear back and forth from both sides. I don't hear the
complaint. But I ain't telling you I am not telling you that it has been hijacked yet.
Oh, okay.
But I'm saying to you that we have a responsibility to try to signal to you at times where we want you to cooperate with us. Look, these programs are not... Let me make this point to you. These programs are not successful by having people come and say, I love you, and everybody's saying the same thing, you know. They're successful out of diverging perspective.
Right.
So we have no vested interest in stopping people from expressing diverging views.
Good. So give me a little chance, right? So I am saying, I don't want to dwell, but I'm saying that I don't hear all this one-sided criticism and complaining. I hear, what I hear, especially from the those people who support the opposition.
Like you.
Well, you can say what you might want to say. But I hear issues. I hear these guys bring issues to the table and try to have them discuss. I'll try to discuss them. That's what I hear. I hear about issues. I don't necessarily hear tearing down for tearing down sake. Some people, but some people right now, when the shoe was on their foot, they're share all the licks and kicks and whatever else. And now, if there is some critical criticisms of the government, you know, not necessarily for criticizing sake, but just to bring some balance, as you like to say.
Over the years, political parties, both of the political parties, while in opposition, have at times organized their supporters to bombard the programs that we have. They seem to believe that there is a value, a political value attached to that.
I listen to the program. I don't see that. I don't see any.
Well, you wouldn't see it, but trust me.
I don't hear it.
Yes, you know, but I am telling you from my experience over the years that I know it has happened, okay?
There's no more CBC calling, and if VOB goes, I am saying you don't know what will follow after.
VOB is not. Don't misunderstand where I stand.
Well,
I told you.
I know it's not going, but I just saying that an extreme could occur along the way. Then you don't want the criticism, so I don't know.
But my friend, I do not understand where you're going. I told you somebody gave this opinion. But this thing about don't want the criticism, this is not about trying to squelch criticism.
All right. So I don't want to drill.
You really taken this in a context that is totally different to what we were discussing. It's not about squelching criticism.
Okay, Ms. Ellis. I don't want to drill, Ms. Ellis. I want to move on. So mm-hmm. I'm the caller recently. Last time I spoke to you a few weeks back, I spoke to you about the vindictive taxes in terms of that was being put on to in particular the PSV vehicles, taxis and what's not in this country. You took offense to my saying mentioning of vindictive. I would even want to go on and say, well, if I took away vindictive, I would use as brutal. The taxes are brutal against the workers.
Yeah, you could say that, but to say that they're vindictive.
That wants to try to make a living as a small man, I don't know if you call him entrepreneur, but just all he's trying to do is live. And now, and this tax, these increases recently in gasoline. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, but in particular, you got to mention this one because this one is taking away a lot of the average working class guy savings or money that he would like to save to help pay for his insurance and the different things he has to pay again a year or a little savings for a little vacation. Something, you know, but this money is taking away all of those possibilities. It's hurting them bad. So I am calling again on the government to relook at this extreme increase in gas prices. I think they're making a ton of money and they should bring the figures. So let me see what's happening relative to this aspect. But I want to move on, Mr. Alice. I want to move on quickly and say that let's talk about the roads before we get cut. I wonder why would the government want to resurface good roads? Why isn't there so many bad roads in this country? You know, so many roads in the country that weren't really looking at properly. Why have they gone after between Norman Niles and Reeks roundabout or some of the other areas on the ABC highway that is in very good condition? All the needs, some of it needs in some cases, is just a little patching. And we're going to now put all that money into the unnecessary repairing the ABC, sections of the ABC highway. And in addition, if I can say, since I am on the roads, I'm just saying, I have a question to ask. I want to know why was RSA not given a contract on this one? We got CO Williams, you got Infra. What happened to RSA again? Are we going back to the stage where black businesses are not getting any business in this country, any serious business? That's the question I would like to leave you with, Mr. Ellis.
All right. Thank you very much.